Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Happy New Year! Welcome into another episode of the Second City Hockey Podcast. Wishing you and yours and all of the Blackhawks fans a happy and healthy 2019. This is Brad Replinger along with Brandon Kane on the other end of the internet airwaves. The third member of the game, Dave Melton, was on site today at the Winter Classic in South Bend, Indiana at Notre Dame Stadium. So we'll get his reactions when he gets back into town a little bit later this week. But we wanted to get some immediate reactions to the game today as the Chicago Blackhawks fall 4-2 in their fourth Winter Classic appearance over the Boston Bruins this time. Chicago, again, 0-4 in Winter Classics. This is the second one that the Blackhawks have hosted, or have been the home team for that matter. But the result's still the same, as they are 1-5 overall in outdoor games. But we bring in our Notre Dame expert, who is presumably a little hungover from the Cotton Bowl that was played a couple of days ago, Brandon Kane. Your team's either in the stadium related to Notre Dame or the Notre Dame football team have gone 0-2 in the past, what is it now, 4 days? How are we? Are you holding up okay over there?
I mean, I might go to the liquor store soon.
What, the day after New Year's?
Yeah, it's been a stretch. That was the first loss at Notre Dame Stadium by the home team since September 9th, I think, of 2017, when they lost to Georgia. So it's been a while, you know, because Notre Dame went undefeated during the regular season. But yeah, not great.
Well, a couple things about today's game, especially this. First of all, I think the biggest question that I know we were talking about a little bit heading into the game was, what will the fan turnout be for a game like this, especially given the fact that this is not a good Blackhawks team heading into a game against a pretty darn good Boston Bruins team at the moment. You know, you're watching one of the worst teams in the NHL play in an outdoor game, and it's, I don't know, and we'll see what happens. Sure enough, the fan base was outstanding. This became the second most attended Winter Classic game since 2014 at the Big House in Ann Arbor. And then you actually have to go back to the very first Winter Classic that was played at Ralph Wilson Stadium in Buffalo. 71,000 people saw the Penguins beat the Sabres in a shootout in that contest. But really, From an atmosphere standpoint, at least on television, it seemed like this was a really cool event. The fan base really did kind of embrace Notre Dame and the opportunity for the Blackhawks to play a game outdoors in that stadium. What were your takes on, you know, how the stadium looked on TV, how the fan base looked, the response to the event being at a venue that maybe might be, say, 3 or 4 years away from when it should have been played, say maybe when the Blackhawks were in one of their cup runs in, say, 2015.
Yeah, I think we had talked about how, like, South Bend is just kind of in the middle of nowhere. So you have to drive on New Year's Day to there, or New Year's Eve, which means you're going to miss bowl games, which, as you know, you and I can attest to, that's just probably the worst thing that can happen during the holidays to you.
And especially on New Year's Day, if you're a college football fan, as I've got the LSU and Central Florida game here on in the background.
Yeah. So, with that, it was kind of iffy as to like how people would show up. I think it's that maybe people just were like, hey, I didn't go to ones in the past, and I know this might be, you know, the last one, or it might be a while until another one. So I'm going to make a point to go out and do it.
Mm.
And plus, like, tickets were cheaper from what I had been seeing. So that might have played a role into it as well. But it looked like it was a good atmosphere. These outdoor games just look better in football stadiums, in my opinion. just based on like a sight view from fans in the stands, you don't have like the awkward angles that you would have in a baseball stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's obviously a more consistent view from the fan standpoint, especially when you play it in a football stadium, just because of the, you know, football stadiums are going to be, you know, universal when it comes to dimensions of the playing surface. So, you know, sight lines are generally consistent between what's called the lower bowl and the middle bowl. Obviously, the college football realm of things, there's generally just one bowl of seating across, you know, most stadiums. Obviously, now you're starting to see more upper decks and that whole thing. But no, I agree. I definitely think a venue like Notre Dame Stadium is a really good one. I will say that the NHL definitely, you know, kind of drew inspiration from what happened at the Big House. Obviously, selling, you know, 105,000 seats to watch the Red Wings and the Maple Leafs play a game. Half the stadium was red, the other half was blue. It was a really cool event in 2014 that they played, and the inspiration behind Notre Dame Stadium, if I remember correctly, was actually designed. It was basically designed to be exactly like Michigan Stadium, you know, in terms of seating arrangements and the bowl configurations, things like that. So it's a really cool venue, and I forget who
football can't win there.
Well, there it is. I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Patrice Bergeron after the game too, was talking to Pierre on the television broadcast, and was saying how, you know, a game being played like that in a football stadium compared to the last time they played, which I want to say, it was 2016. It was at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Obviously, Gillette being a professional stadium, you get some weirder configurations with upper decks and sight lines there as well. Obviously, the NFL is trying to, you know, maximize different, more, you know, more around crowd noise and, you know, more luxury seating opportunities and things like that, whereas college is a little more raw of an experience with a football stadium. But you know, compared to, let's say, like a Busch Stadium at St. Louis, where maybe if you're down the left field line or the right field line, you'll have a great sight line because you're basically on top of the boards. Whereas if you're in the outfield, say left field, center, or right, you're the furthest away from the actual playing surface. So maybe the sight lines aren't nearly as good as, you know, you would get normally. But no, I thought the fan base, both fan bases to that point too, because obviously there were a lot of Boston fans there. Every time you saw a Tuukka Rask save, you had a big contingency of fans chanting Tuukka, which was, you know, good obviously for the atmosphere, and obviously a lot of Blackhawks fans there, with it being a home game in the proximity to Chicago. So yeah, no, I liked that the college football stadium was being used, which we can touch on this a little bit later as well. They announced during the game that next year the Winter Classic will be played at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, which, again, another college football another college football venue. Obviously, is it seems to be at least the trend for what they want these sort of games to kind of hold in the years to come. So, but again, you know, then you've got historic venues like Wrigley and Fenway that are, you know, pretty iconic, that create awesome atmospheres as well. So, but But let's move on a little bit here to the game itself. It was kind of a hot button topic a little bit. At least we had talked about it on our on the website at secondcityhockey.com about who would start in goal for the Blackhawks between Cam Ward and Colin Delia. Obviously, Delia being the hotter of the two hands coming into the game, but Jeremy Colladin went with Cam Ward in today's game, which at the end of it all seems like a good decision. Given the play that that Delia had throughout the contest, I thought he was rock solid heading into the game. But what did you think about the Delia? Good. What did you think about the decision to start Ward over Delia, and ultimately what you thought of Cam Ward's performance at the Winter Classic?
The NHL is like a good old boys league, so it's no surprise that Ward was given the nod just because he uses a walker to get around the rink. And Delia's, riding around on his longboard, being the California kid. So it didn't really surprise me. And it showed today that it didn't really matter. Aside from that rebound that Ward gave up on that last goal, or the second to last goal, the go-ahead one. Ward was fine. I mean, maybe that second goal he would want back, but for the most part, it's not those guys in net. It's the goons in front of them.
Right.
So, I mean, there's the defensive issue, and then there's also not playing Alex DeBrincat top 6 minutes, and that's just a different whole thing to dive into. But
we're sending Yoko Haru to World Juniors.
Oh no, I'm totally fine with that. I was fine with him going with Ward. I kind of expected it, and it was more of defensive lapses that, surprise, surprise, cost of the Blackhawks game, and them not just them being dumbasses and committing all those penalties at the start of the third period.
Yeah.
Because that's what it really boiled down to, was special teams, because Boston was 2-for-5 on the power play with their first two goals coming that way, and then just all those penalties just they killed them off, but you're playing almost half the period in your own end. So. Mm-hmm.
But especially in the third period too. And that was the sequence there early in the third that initially we all kind of thought was going to be the turning point of the game as it is, because you had the Kane high sticking call, and then Anisimov gets called on just a dumb tripping penalty because he's not moving his feet in his own defensive zone, but that's a whole other point of conversation amongst many things there. Forsling would ultimately get called for, I think, the same thing. I don't know if it was a hooking call, but either way, Forsling getting called for not moving in his own defensive zone as well. That was just garbage. But no, the special teams ultimately killed off all three of the penalties, and there was one point, again, you had a 5-on-3 advantage for Boston, and the Hawks were able to kill that off. I think it was a solid 90 seconds. They only allowed one shot on goal during that sequence, which ultimately a lot of us were thinking was the turning point in the game. The Hawks would then turn it around and ultimately score. But Chicago going 0-for-4 on the power play today, I think, was another big story, or at least very telling of, how the result of the game turned out, especially just because of, I think it was a lack of production as well. I want to say they only got 3 shots on goal across 4 power plays in this contest, which, as anybody knows, is not going to get the job done. I'll absolutely give credit to the penalty kill, because again, they did a great job of keeping Chicago in the game late. Again, they could have folded like a cheap lawn chair there later in the game, especially on that 5-on-3 advantage. But they didn't. They held suit and then ultimately killed off another huge penalty there at the kind of that midway point on the Forsling one, like you were saying, especially after they spent all that time in their own zone. So I have takes on Gustav Forsling's play, which obviously has been an issue for a lot of the season. And then, you know, in a game like this where you're missing Yokoharu because he is at World Juniors, you're kind of, you know, shorthanded in terms of who you want to put in there. Obviously, you're not able to use a guy like Brandon Manning after he was traded to Edmonton, or, you know, any other player that you would have sent down to Rockford in that instance. So, you know, across the line of or across the lines of Dahlstrom, Gustafsson, Keith Murphy, and Seabrook, Forsling's basically the guy that's got to fill that role. So, what did you think about the play of the forward, specifically Patrick Kane? He had a couple of really good scoring chances in this contest. There was that really sweet little saucer pass to Dylan Strome that almost gave Chicago a 3-2 lead there in the third period as well. But talk to us about the forwards, what you saw and what you liked or maybe didn't like about their performance today.
Yeah, I think the two standouts were Kane and Perlini for sure. I don't know if it's Perlini was just never able to play outside in the UK, but that guy had himself a game. And Dominic Cahoon actually showed up, so that was nice.
Did he ever?
DeBrincat just disappears in this third line role. So I would flip him and Anisimov ASAP if you want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But and then seeing Sakura being able to generate some offense was nice.
I so badly wanted his first NHL goal to be in the Winter Classic. That'd be so cool.
Yeah. Because I have like a whole bunch of drafts for like this kid's first NHL goal and everything, and they've been sitting there for like the entire season. So I'm just like waiting.
You're not supposed to tell the people about the process, Brandon. We don't pre-write these.
And obviously, it was nice to see Dominic Cahoon goal reaction, as always.
That was his A-plus Cahoon face. Again, secondcityhockey.com. Check out the Twitter. There is a really good picture of his face after he had scored. It was just about perfect. Das German Winger. He was sehr gut.
Hayden was a healthy scratch, right? Am I remembering that right?
I don't know if he was a healthy scratch. I just thought he was a... all right. Yeah, I'll have to look that up. I think he definitely was a scratch. I just don't know if it was healthy or not.
Who cares? But that was good that he didn't play.
I was going to say, I don't want him to play in that game.
And I thought they would because somehow he went to Yale and all that stuff. So, just because Martinson has a better offensive upside, which isn't saying much, but there it is. I don't know. Saad had that one good backhanded attempt, I think, in the second period or the first, and wasn't able to convert. And that was just a good play by Rask.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
He had a few couple of good plays, too, especially generating offense in front of the net. One of the bigger plays of the game too. I think it was a play where Gustafsson, who had himself a game, put one in on net, and ultimately it was Saad trying to clean up the mess there in front. And I forget if he just lost his footing or if he got tripped or what happened, but he ultimately took a tumble there in front of the net. But that was one of the more aggressive parts of the offense earlier in the contest. I want to say it was middle of the first period, but no, and that's actually another player too, Brandon Saad, that played fairly well. But yeah, no, between guys like you mentioned, Pierolini, Gustafsson, obviously having a good game. I liked Saad in his performance today, even though he was on the raw end of the deal in terms of the score sheet. You know, you got some good contribution from Jonathan Toews. Man, there were a couple there too where he had some glorious scoring chances that the Tuukka Rask ultimately swallowed up, which was super impressive. Then obviously Cahoon scoring early, which was great. Heck, even David Kampf had an assist in this contest. So really good performance by those guys. And then, yeah, I liked Kane's involvement looked to be a little more passive in this one as opposed to aggressive. Like, obviously, I think he had the big breakaway chance in the second period, I want to say, or the first, that got broken up by Tuukka Rask. I think he just ran out of ice. But between Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, I thought their performance was fine. But I'm with you. Ultimately, it's the defense that lets you down. And I'm pointing all fingers at Gustav Forsling and the lack of pressure that he provided in and behind the goal crease and in the slot as well. Anytime a Bruin would make his way into the dots and try to, you know, put pressure or at least screen Cam Ward, it was completely, you know, there was just no activity whatsoever from Forsling. He just kind of stand there and watch him go past him. It's like, move your feet, damn it. Ugh, he's killing us out there today. But no, and the other thing too, back to the Cam Ward topic as well. He played well. I didn't hate the fact that they started Cam Ward over Delia just because in a game like that, Delia either shuts him out or gives up 7 goals. You know, it's either a reliable appearance no matter what, or it's a reliable appearance or it's a completely volatile one or the other. And I thought putting Ward in, at least, you know, to start Ward in the game and to see how he started. Obviously you could switch to Delia if you really wanted to, or if you went down early sort of a thing, but no, the start was there. They got the first goal. They played fairly well. They got the fans into it early and just some bad defensive mistakes and some sloppy play on the special team side of things, like you had mentioned, is really what cost them the game. And ultimately their fifth loss outdoors. Let's not forget the stadium series in TCF Bank Stadium in Minnesota, which was a 7-1 drubbing in 2000. Was that 2016 or was that 2017?
That was 16.
Because you had that one, and then obviously the lone crowning achievement for them outside was the Pittsburgh game in 2013, I believe.
14.
Was that one 14?
Yeah.
Against Pittsburgh in the snowstorm, which was a really cool atmosphere. Oh, yeah. Speaking of cool atmospheres, and I tweeted about this. Man, I wanted the Notre Dame band there for this. I get it. You've got the Fort Wayne Symphony Orchestra or South Bend Symphony Orchestra or whatever. That should have been the Notre Dame band. And I know that they traveled, but that was the 29th, was that game? There's plenty of time to come back to campus. You don't even need a full band. You can just put 100 kids out there. They're not going to march in formation. You just go out there, you know, stand out there and play. I really wanted the Notre Dame band at this game, or even a hockey band. You know, you can play the school song, or, you know, they can learn an arrangement of Chelsea Dagger or something like that. I think that really, really would have added to the, you know, the experience, especially since they went the college football route. I have to look this up now. I don't know if Michigan was at the Big House for the Maple Leafs and Red Wings game. That would have been pretty good to have them be there too. Because I think Northwestern was at the Wrigley game in 2009, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, give me a college band, especially give me a good hockey band. I have no complaints with that if you're going to play a game at a college football venue. So, but that's old band geek Brad on his rocker screaming, "Get off my front lawn!" So. We will digress into
one thing on mm-hmm. the Delia Ward thing. I think they also started Ward because if Delia does get shelled for 4 goals, then it's like, well, this is supposed to be their goalie of the future, and look at this, like on the national stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side, if he looks amazing, then all the conversation's like, well, why don't you just get rid of Ward and have this guy play? Like
right.
The whole time. And that just like dictates the whole conversation. Not even if they're like in the playoff hunt, it's just like, why not just ride this guy?
Mm-hmm.
So by having Ward play, they avoided all that.
Sure. Yeah. So that's
a good move for them. But
for sure. Oh, for sure.
So next year's games. Let's move on to that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so it was announced during one of the intermissions with Gary Bettman that the Dallas Stars will be hosting next year's Winter Classic at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Their opponent has yet to be determined. We were talking a little bit pre-show about who we think could be a good fit for this game, which, by the way, and this is another point of the conversation, I believe it's 7 teams in the NHL now have not played an outdoor game, which I don't have the list of 7 in front of me, but I believe it is, well, that will go away with Dallas, because Dallas was one of them. Dallas, Vegas, Nashville, Tampa, Florida, and then Carolina. Oh, yeah, it's Carolina and Colorado.
No, Colorado's played Columbus.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. Columbus. So
played the Red Wings in the Stadium Series at Coors Field.
I was gonna say they got the Coors game. Do we think, I mean, to draw attention to the Cotton Bowl, do we think that Dallas plays one of those 7 teams, or do you think Bettman rests on his laurels and tries to bring in at least a big name team for people to travel to, or, you know, who do you think are, you know, some potential opponents for the Stars in next year's Winter Classic?
So I think the top two that haven't played that would be the choices would be Vegas and Tampa Bay. And then the other line of thinking is to go the football route and pick a team from NFC East territory, because you know there would already be that built-in thing there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at the Flyers, Capitals, Rangers, or Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
The Islanders are obviously a no goal. That's not going to happen. So I would think out of all of those, like the Flyers would probably be the top pick if you were to go that route.
And the Flyers, I think,
is probably the choice.
You think Vegas?
I'd say Tampa and then Vegas for the Colorado one.
Colorado
or Minnesota. Or Vegas or Minnesota to go to Air Force.
Yeah. And that's the other announced game was a Stadium Series game at the Air Force Academy Football Stadium in Colorado, where the Avalanche will be the host, and another opponent has yet to be determined for that one as well. But I'm with you there. I think that's a good Vegas game to have them go to Colorado in March. That would be a pretty decent opportunity for them. I don't hate the Philly play. The Flyers they've played in 2 Winter Classics. They played in 2. They played, they hosted 1 at Citizens Bank Park in 2012, and then played at Fenway against Boston in 2010. So yeah, the Flyers definitely are due for an outdoor game. Could always go the Penguins as well. If you're looking to go, you know, popular team that could see a fan base travel sort of a thing, the Penguins have played in 2 Winter Classics. Their last appearance was 2011 when they hosted at Heinz Field against the Capitals. So that's an opportunity there as well. But I see what the NFC East conversation is a pretty decent. That's not a bad idea with you know, trying to rope in again like a Capitals sort of a thing. That way they, you know, you get Redskins fans that want to travel to Dallas to watch that game and, you know, schedule it around football week, that sort of a thing. That might not be a bad idea either. The one that was pretty funny that I saw Mark Lazarus put on Twitter was that the Minnesota Wild and the Dallas Stars should play each other just to see who gets the glory and the title of the, you know, the history of the North Stars sort of a thing, goes to the winner and just call it the North Stars Bowl or whatever. That was pretty funny. I think it's safe to say, and again, part of what we were talking about, I think it's safe to say that Nashville is out. You want Nashville to host one of these things. And definitely with their fan base and some of the stadiums that are in the greater Nashville, Tennessee area, you've obviously got, what is it, LP Field or Nissan Stadium or whatever it is where the Titans play in downtown Nashville. That's not a bad opportunity. You could go, you could hold it in the Tennessee football stadium if you wanted. Or you could do what college football tried to do and play the game at the Bristol Motor Speedway and have a game in front of, what is that, 140,000-seat arena?
Something like that.
Bristol, Tennessee, by the way, not Bristol, Connecticut. There is a 162,000-seat stadium. And those are just seats. Again, if you're going to put a hockey rink in the middle of the whole thing, down in Pitt Road there, I'm sure you'd have to bring in some kind of auxiliary seating in order to make sure that people could see that, bring in temporary seats or something like that for the, for where the track sits or something like that. That could be kind of interesting. I forget who played that football game. Wasn't that West Virginia and Tennessee, I think?
Virginia Tech.
That was it. The Pilot Flying J battle at the Bristol. Which would be cool. They can put a football stadium in there. And you could do a hockey rink if you really wanted to. Honestly, the sight lines in that would be god-awful, and I wouldn't go. But, I mean, hey, Nashville fans are pretty legit, and that fan base would potentially travel really well.
I think the other one that we might be able to rule out is Carolina, because there's been discussions about them hosting an outdoor game at NC State.
Could do that. Literally across the street from PNC.
Great stadium. So that would be fun. But those are also two teams where if one was hosting, it wouldn't be bad if the other one was the opponent.
Oh, so like Carolina and Nashville holding the game?
Yeah. I mean, just like color-wise, like that'd be good for McDonald's.
I was going to say red against yellow. The one that I'm thinking is probably going to happen potentially in 2021 due to proximity. If Nashville doesn't host, have the game in Columbus and do Columbus and Nashville at Ohio State in Ohio Stadium. And then do, you've got the blue versus the yellow. That could be pretty good. And that's not too bad of a drive from Nashville to get up into Columbus. Proximity wise, that's pretty close. Or again, go the other way and invite the Red Wings to come south and play that game. That way you get the Ohio and Michigan rivalry sort of a thing, between Columbus and Detroit. That could be a pretty decent, matchup. Also a blue against red matchup there as well. So that one could be pretty decent, but I think do you think it's safe for Nashville to be able to host a game and not have to rely on, the fan base of, let's say, the New York Rangers or the Flyers or an original six team to come down and play in a game like that? Do you think do you think Nashville could kind of hold their own in a big stadium like a University of Tennessee or would they have to maybe go smaller and go to, like a Nissan Stadium in downtown Nashville or, even have it at like Vanderbilt or something?
I think having it at Nissan or Vanderbilt would be fine. And they wouldn't have to play the Blackhawks or the Blues or the Red Wings. But if they were to go to Neyland Stadium, they would have to. Or like the Caps. So, yeah, those would be the options that I would lay out.
It's fun. And ultimately our final talking point, these games are fun and I like them. I think the idea of the Winter Classic is a really cool thing to play a game outdoors. And typically you end up playing games that, you know, are appealing at least to fan bases where you have, like today it was Boston and Chicago, or, you know, games in the past where you had the Blues and the Blackhawks playing at Busch Stadium, you know, that sort of a thing. Are you a fan of the Winter Classic? Are you a fan of Chicago being in them just because it's an easy crowd draw? Or, you know, are they stupid games just because Chicago always loses them and we should never play them?
The first part that I like is it's something different. You think about Thanksgiving and it's always football. You think about Christmas and it's always basketball. On New Year's Day, it's always college football. But then you have a hockey game. So you can watch hockey and then you can dive into your college football later. So it's, you know, changes it up a little bit. So that's nice. And it's also good for like the casual fan to like, oh yeah, check this out. So that's nice. I think it'd be kind of cool because it looks like the NHL isn't going to allow players to play in the Olympics if they...
It's dumb.
Right, yeah. Totally agree. If they switched it up to where you held off on doing multiple games outdoors and did those every Olympic year.
Ooh.
And then... You had the Winter Classic was a, you know, that's a staple every year. But then you don't do multiple ones until like the year of the Olympics. And you do them that week maybe, or like scatter them out. I don't know. Just something different.
Sure. What about...
Or make the All-Star game outdoors. I don't know.
Outdoor All-Star game would be insane. That'd be cool. I know it's in San Jose this year, but that would be really cool. What about like a didn't the old World
Cup game at AT&T Park? Sign me up for that.
That would be that'd be pretty sweet. What about the old World Cup of Hockey, which I thought. I think they play that every 4 years, I want to say.
So next year.
Last one, I was going to say, last one was 2016. Yeah. Again, World Cup, so they play it around the world sort of a thing. But I still think it'd be really cool if you could do some kind of an organized tournament, you know, in the States being the host, but then have a bunch of different, you know, teams come to play. So again, in this case, you know, if you go the World Cup route, you had, you know, like, you know, Canada, Russia, Sweden, and the United States or something like that, or, you know, have a European team in there or whatever, you know, that would be, that'd be awesome. I think it'd be pretty damn cool. And have it, you know, set at different outdoor venues, sort of a thing. I'm thinking along the lines of the World Baseball Classic, where you had games played in like Venezuela and games played in Japan and the whole thing. And then they had the finals. What was that? Was 2015 or 2016 as well? With the United States won that one, but ultimately that created a lot of buzz for, you know, baseball fans, obviously in Chicago, because you had like Javier Baez and Wilson Contreras were playing on their team for Venezuela and for Puerto Rico. And then I think there were some other interests in there too, but you know, how cool would it be to do a, you know, like do an outdoor, if they're not going to have if the Olympics aren't going to allow, or if the NHL is not going to put, you know, professional players in the Olympics, then why not have some kind of a, you know, an organized tournament with, you know, host country sort of a thing, you know, and make it an outdoor game or something like that. I think it'd be kind of neat.
It'd definitely be different.
You know, I just, something to generate a little more buzz outside of the standard.
We're all for fun.
Yeah. You know, or making something a little more unique than just, you know, playing. Yeah, exactly. A traditional hockey game at a building or venue or something like that. So, as fun as they are, though, as they can be ultimately very frustrating, again, as the Blackhawks fall 4-2 today to the Boston Bruins at Notre Dame Stadium. So, final thoughts, Brandon, things you want to look forward to, or you know, things you want to move forward to?
Quarterfinals start Wednesday for World Juniors. So there's all seven guys are still alive. Blackhawks are guaranteed a medalist for sure. And there will be prospects in both medal games because Sweden, U.S., Finland, and there's another team that I'm forgetting, Canada.
I was going to say, really?
They're all in the bottom half of the bracket. Bottom half of the bracket. So that guarantees those medal games will be of interest to Blackhawk fans. So keep looking at the site and we'll be updating you on World Junior stuff. And then after the World Juniors wraps, we will have a much abbreviated top 25 update for listeners and readers. So just be, hey, this is how so-and-so did it. Worlds and how they've been performing in the AHL or their junior team, and this is how things have shuffled, and there will be quite a big shakeup, I can assure you this.
Absolutely, as well as some more in-depth coverage too on what's happening in Rockford, obviously, with what you know, some of the pieces that have moved up to the big club and pieces that are still there in Rockford developing. That's going to be a big area that not just fans, but the team need to focus on moving forward as well. So keep your eyes open for more coverage on that, as well as the podcast. We're hopefully going to have some guest appearances here in 2019, change a couple of different show formats here and there, and try to get you guys some newer content and different types of content here in the new year. But until that time, on behalf of and everybody here at Second City Hockey, we wish you again a happy new year. Hope everybody had a great holiday season. Hope everybody was responsibly safe yesterday evening into this morning, and everybody's nursing their collective hangovers very well. That's Brandon Kane at Brandon M. Kane on Twitter. I'm TCR Brad on Twitter. We're at Second City Hockey. That's 2ND City Hockey. Again, 2ND City Hockey. SecondCityHockey.com. Check us out on iTunes, Podbean, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And we will talk to you guys when the regular season, if you will, continues and we go back indoors when the Chicago Blackhawks return to the ice. So until that time, again, Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks a lot for listening. And go Blackhawks!
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.